It is 8 a.m. and I am going to call the meeting to order. Can everyone hear me?
We got you, Tom.
All right. I'm going to ask for a public comment on non-agenda items. So I'll give a minute for anybody who wants to comment from the who's listening in. I'm going to, I did receive one long letter that I am not going to read the whole letter, but it was a letter from Greg Lewis, who was complaining about one of our trustees, Mike Duquesnoy, who is a employee of Low Mountain Land Company, who is voting on annexing in property petition partially by Low Mountain Land Company. He was stating that he thought that was a conflict of interest. We have asked our attorney for her opinion as to whether by Montana law this is a conflict of interest. And in her opinion, she says it is not. So therefore, we have not said anything about Mike Duquesnoy voting on this issue. With that, hello, Bill.
Okay, I'm in the meeting. I had a hell of a time getting in. I don't know why, but I'm here.
I have not heard any
good
other comments. So I've been going around for all the trustees and ask for conflicts of interest. Dick Vast?
None.
Joe Shropshire?
None.
Brian Wheeler?
Brian, you're on mute.
Brian, do you have a conflict of interest?
I do not. Thank you.
Peter Manka?
None.
Mike Duquesnoy?
None.
Mike Wilsinski?
None.
I have none myself. With that, we will go on to the consent agenda. We have the minutes, the financial reports, and sewer and water operator reports. Any comments? Questions?
Ponds look lower than I've seen them in a long time.
They are.
I'll make it a motion to approve.
We have a motion by Dick Vast.
Brian Wheeler.
A second by Brian Wheeler. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Passes unanimously. We are on to District Ordinance 21-1002, Annexation Ordinance for American Bank and Mabee Properties. Second and final reading.
So in your board packet, I have a clean version and a red line version. And the red line version includes new text from the motion made on August 24th. So there were some stipulations added, A and B there. And then a third part is if they're unsuccessful getting their LIHTC funding, that the 25 SOPs revert back to the district.
Yeah.
And we do have Susan Swimley on the meeting if there's any questions for her.
Is Scott Buecher on yet?
Yeah. Scott is traveling today, but he can be on the meeting for the first part here, but he is on the meeting at this point.
Scott, do you have any kind of updated information or any thing that would change the trajectories that we discussed on that growth rates graph?
Yeah, I sent an email to you and Ron late last night. I extended the axis out as you asked and did a double check on the number of SFEs left, and the packet says there's 111 of the 300 we dropped in April. So I added those to what we left on the table in April, which was 632 or something like that. So there's a few more SFEs than I showed last month, still available. So that was good news. Gives you a little more time. But I will also note that the number of SFEs connecting so far in 2021 is, it'll approach that 2016 record. So just be aware of that.
Which was about the 6%?
Yep. I think that was when the SFEs for the Montage were booked or something.
Do you have that graph, Ron?
From the last meeting?
No, for Scott said.
It was like 9 o'clock last night.
I can pull it up while I'm looking for that. Susan, I highlighted some text there, which has kind of lived through these very various revisions, you know, referencing an election. We didn't do a formal election, we did do a survey. So leaving that text unchanged, I don't know if it really matters, but I wanted to at least point it out.
I think we also have a buzzy mic somewhere. I don't know if the rest of the folks on the Zoom call are hearing that, but.
We did a public meeting, didn't we?
Well, we did meetings, but we didn't do an election per se. We did do a survey. So that talks about an election, which was contemplated at one point. But as this moved forward, we didn't actually do a formal election.
He's asking for electoral input as well, which I think that survey would qualify.
I would think so. And if we amend this again, then I think it sets us back. So that's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah, so the public meeting. We did have a special public meeting as well in there. Was it second to last session? It's like the second reading of the last iteration. So we took care of that.
When did you send your email, Scott? I don't see it. If you're a computer, I can share your screen.
So Susan, maybe you could weigh in, but through my reading of that yellow highlighted section, I believe we fulfilled that obligation as far as holding a public meeting and soliciting opinions regarding an election. We did not commit to actually holding an election.
Right.
This is Susan, and I agree. That is, it does say that you're going to hold a meeting to seek from the public and the electorate. And public and electorate can be different and are different depending on your, I'm going to call it status of the input of the election and you got and the information and the housing. So I wasn't concerned about the phrasing of that sentence.
Okay.
where are we at on the progress of the new plant, Scott? Any changes there?
Still muted.
Sorry, Mike. No major updates there. They're continuing to trudge along, I'd say. They're not up to full speed still, and I've asked them about a formal schedule extension request too many times already, and if, you know, it's in their court to ask for that.
Okay. So changes from the last meeting, there's actually more SFDs than we were contemplating during our last discussion?
Yeah, about 111 more than I showed last time.
Okay.
And I'm getting the hot spot, and I'll resend that.
Okay.
Brian, I think that email would have come in the day or two before the last meeting.
Well, Scott said...
This is a new one, Dick.
Okay.
Stuck in my outbox for some reason.
I'll make a motion to approve the annexation request.
We have a motion by Mike Wyszynski.
Yeah.
I'll second that.
Who was the second?
Brian.
Brian Wheeler seconds.
So we could conceivably have one more reading on this, right?
If you amend it today, you wouldn't have another reading.
Or even unamended?
I believe if it's adopted on the second reading with these changes as it's submitted, it's final.
Okay.
Susan, correct me if I'm wrong on that.
I agree with you.
Any further discussion?
I'd like to see that chart before we vote, Tom.
All righty. So, has anyone seen it?
Well, I'm still waiting for it to come in. Scott's trying to resend it.
I basically just kind of took pencil and paper and extended out the axis. I don't know if that's seeable anywhere, but
I can scan that and put it up if you want, Peter.
Basically, our 4% line looked like it extended out to December 1 of 23.
You want me to? Oh, here we go. Okay, I'll forward this.
Do you want that scan, Rob?
No, I'm just going to forward this over to our. And pull it up.
No, I guess given the additional SFEs that we've added since the last reading, an extending 4% growth line, which is the center line, we're looking at April 1st of 2024 as far as where we would be at a 0.0 SFEs.
So this is what Scott just sent me. Mm-hmm.
We look at our max 6% growth rate, puts us at April, May of May 1st, 2023. Set agreed date, the earliest date, August 1st. So continued 6% rate.
we'd be pushing it. 5% rate is October 1st, 2023.
So, Scott, what changed on the one we're looking at here?
On your left axis there, instead of 632 that I knew you had still in reserve, I added the 111 that Marlene still has in her pocket. So that left axis, you start a little higher.
Gotcha.
Got it.
Bought you about, 3 months or 4 months at a typical absorption rate.
Yeah, I
didn't have a chance to do it.
And everybody, keep in mind that 107.3 gallons per day per SFE is probably the squishiest number in here right now.
You think it's going to go lower based on what we're seeing, or increase?
If we redid it this year, it'll go lower. If we have another pandemic next year and a bunch of snow and rain and I&I, then it'll go higher. But Ron's crews have been attacking I&I pretty hard and continue to do so. So I think, and if you keep doing that, that helps.
That could increase the number of SFEs as well.
But Scott, if you take it based on the water use, the 107 is a very conservative number to use, isn't it?
That's the biggest number you all have ever used, but DEQ pushed that on us last November because it is more of a max month than an annual average. And they feel, and I think they're right, that that's a more appropriate, the max month kind of time frame, and it's actually about a max 2 month time frame, is more appropriate for, conservatism with a treatment plant.
So in general, all these factors are shifting these lines out, extending our point of reaching zero SFEs.
More favorably.
Well, not really, if we go to 6%.
Yeah, 6% would carry us into June 1, 2023. But that is assuming that 107.3 gallons per day, which we agree is a fairly conservative figure.
Do we have any further comments or questions? At this point, I would ask for any public comment from people who are listening in.
Hi, this is Bella with Explore Big Sky. I was just wondering if Scott could clarify an earlier comment that he had made about which growth trend we're closest to at the moment. I think you said something about that 6%, but I didn't quite catch it.
You've been at 4%. Since that 2016, which Ron, that's the big hotel, right?
Yeah, the montage.
Yeah, so without the montage, you've been at 4%.
This is Laura Seafang. I'd just like to, again, reiterate how important this project is for our community. I have every indication we're going to be able to get our LIHTC funding next month, and we're very excited to be able to move forward and add 100 apartments, helping house 400 very deserving local workers.
All right, not hearing any other public comment, I will call the question. Brian Wheeler, how do you vote?
I vote yes.
Dick Fass, how do you vote?
I have the same concerns I had previously, concerned about the precedent we're setting and all the uncertainty that's in the environment right now. I'm voting no.
Peter Manca.
I would say, new information. As we are trending, it appears that we're going to be able to accommodate this. I feel like the $7 million that the community stands to benefit with the LIHTC funding is significant. And yeah, for that reason, I'm going to vote yes.
Mike Kwasinski.
I think the communities voted yes. I think there's a genuine need for housing. This is a great opportunity. There's not many of these available in the Big Sky area. And I think the data supports our ability to annex the 25 SFPs. I'm going to vote yes.
Mike Duquenoy.
Just.
Mike Duquenoy, how do you vote?
I'm going to vote yes.
Joe Shropshire, how do you vote?
Oh, Bill, I think you're muted. We had some background noise. We killed your mic.
Bill, we still haven't heard you. Could you try
Bill,
again?
Bill, you're on mute. But we can see the top
here. Yeah, here it is. Okay, I vote no.
okay, and I, this is Tom Reeves. I vote no as well. The motion passes 4-3. The next business action item is District Resolution 21-06, approving increases to connection charges for water and sewer systems.
Tom, clarification, does that second and final reading?
That is.
Thank you.
Okay, also in the board packet is a resolution which will implement the wastewater plant investment charge and water system investment charges that Ryan Graff has recommended to the district. You all approve moving forward with his recommendations at the August 24 meeting. So this resolution puts that in motion. So we've got one increase on the wastewater plant investment charge. Actually, two numbers there. One is for projects that have been in the district and into the tax levy. New projects, this would be annex land, of course, pay a 6170 charge because they have not paid into the tax levy prior to December 31, 2020. And then the second change is outlined here. From the version I had in your board packet, this one's a little different. Ryan Graff sent me an email yesterday after he reviewed it, suggested adding this language to the irrigation connections based on meter size for non-residential irrigation meters. So we've got this table here, which is also part of Ryan's recommendation. And we've got the same cutoff for properties that have been paying tax, because we do have tax levy out there for water projects. So the numbers are different. There's one other proposed change here. And that has to do with water service line upsize charges. So this is a new category. We're seeing a lot more demand for water services to be upsized. And the reason for that is we get these homes cascading around the district where the fire suppression engineers are telling the owner that they have to upsize their water line to satisfy their projected fire flow needs for the house. So that creates work for the district in that most of our services are 1 inch or 3/4, and we're seeing 1.5 inches. What's the biggest lines you're seeing?
2 inch.
2 inch, up to 2 inch. So that requires us to dig back to the main, change the corp stop, upsize that line from the main to the lot. This just clarifies that the district is going to charge the owner our labor material plus a 5% add to that. And I think that's a good start point. I know Vince, I talked to him. He was suggesting we have an additional fee on top of that. So as a kind of a deterrent from doing this, I don't know if it would have that effect, but so this is what's proposed. It's making it clear that we're going to charge the owner for those line upsizing charges.
So, Jim, does this happen pretty much every time somebody needs fire suppression?
This seems to be a newer trend in the world of fire suppression and residential units. You know, this has been going on for quite a few years, but I think what's happening here, and there's more to this. I think this is a good start, like Ron said, but one thing to realize is a lot of the mains in the street were sized to service X amount of 1-inch services for residential. Now suddenly everybody seems to think they need a 2-inch service. The main design was not there for that. We can only assume if you have a 2-inch main, you have the capability of pulling so much water. So this is a real issue we need to get a handle on. Talking with some of the fire suppression people, and I've said this for years, if you talk to five of them, you get five different answers on what people need for fire suppression. So it's a kind of a moving target, but it sounds like this new 2-inch service will allow them to save money on their end with fire suppression within the house. So it's something we really need to understand better and get a handle on, because we're going to overtax our mains if we start having everybody upsize 2-inch, because this is the new trend in fire suppression. It's kind of concerning, really.
Is it worth us developing a district-wide policy?
Systematic? Yeah, I think that the size, you know, we had the opposite problem on the front end when we took over this water system, in that a lot of the original lines were 3/4 inch copper, and they were kind of bare minimum for any kind of irrigation or anything. We had a lot of complaints, and right on the front end, we put a policy in minimum, you know, to put 1-inch services with new mains going in, all of Cascade, everything that's happened since the 90s forward, we require a 1-inch service. Now they've taken it the other direction, it seems like, and want bigger services that isn't really designed with these main sizes. So I would, you know, and Vince and I have kind of run into this a lot lately. There've been two or three of them here in the last month, and it's really woken us up to the fact that I think we better look at a policy where you stay with the 1-inch you have, and if you have to modify your sprinkler plan. I haven't spoken with this fire chief, but the fire chief prior to this, before Bill left for Florida, I had talked to him, and he was confused because it wasn't any input on their part. Their philosophy on fire suppression is it's supposed to come on within one or two rooms wherever the fire starts. You're not supposed to be able to flood the house with water everywhere. So he felt it was an over-design, but the fire suppression companies, like I say, they all seem to have a different opinion. But bottom line, if we have a 2-inch service, we have to be able to supply that 2-inch water service, and that changes our whole initial design on these water mains. So something to keep, you know, I think Ron's exactly right. This is a good start to try to curb this, and we need to get some engineering advice on where we should go in this direction, because we really can't
change these out to 2-inch and provide the sewer and the fire protection and the fire hydrants and everything else that we had intended, so.
Well, and I don't know what the fire district criteria is now. It used to be, I think, 3,500 square feet. If you built something bigger than that, you had to have fire systems. So a question for you guys, are you seeing these fire systems going in homes smaller than 3,500 square feet?
I can't really answer that right now, but probably the better question right along those same lines is what defines fire suppression in a house? How many gallons per minute? You know, the one that kind of the catalyst for this conversation, I went back to the builder and I said, well, your fire suppression, you know, people said they need to upsize it to 2-inch. Have they asked how many gallons per minute are available? Do they know what the pressure is in the street? No. So it's just an automatic 2 inches better than 1 inch with big repercussions for the district down the line. So it needs to be looked into, and we need to look from our end on a design side what we can supply, and if we can't supply anything bigger, they need to redesign the system with similar to an irrigation system with more zones or whatever they need to do. Because we've had fire suppression systems being installed in Big Sky for 20 plus years. We never needed 2 inch before. Suddenly we need 2 inch now. So that's kind of the way we're looking at it from our operations, and we've been hit with two or three of them. Same builder, same fire suppression guy. He has decided 2 inches is the way to go. So something for us to really get a handle on before it gets too far down the road.
And if we're installing all these 2-inch upstream, theoretically, we may not have adequate water downstream to provide the flows that are designed on existing.
Well, the original design engineer for the subdivision, if they'd have known everybody was going to have a 2-inch service, it'd probably been a 10 or 12 or 16-inch main or something different. They were intended to be 1-inch services. So this new infatuation with 2-inch services changes the game. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like we should kind of develop a standard policy response to this.
I totally agree, and I think, you know, we need to clarify what the district, you know, when you look at the, you know, to complicate it more, our system, the pressures change from one end of the, you know, system to the other a lot, but I think that we can guarantee you X amount of gallons within your house, and if you need more than that, then, you know, one of the options is a cistern. You know, a lot of the fire suppression companies in the past have actually put a cistern within the house to be able to pump more water. Kind of putting the responsibility on the owner versus trying to retrofit the entire water system to accommodate what your demand may be.
Can't we just keep it 1 inch and have them look around at 1-inch service?
That's exactly what I would like to do.
So you guys want to remove that section that we put in here?
I would agree that we should remove it, and basically a 2-inch service on an existing 8-inch main. Now, if a new subdivision comes in and their design is, you know, with water supply, water storage, fire suppression, main size, everything else down the line, able to accommodate 2-inch services, that's another story. But right now, we're retrofitting a water mains with 2-inch services that we weren't designed to be able to, you know, supply.
Could you highlight that language again, Tom?
Right here?
The new one that was added.
This one?
In the irrigation sick charge.
Well, that's a different thing, but... So this is a different...
Okay.
Different thing altogether.
Yep.
The other thing that, you know, we've got a very dynamic water system. We have all these PRV valves involved. We're making changes, we're adding PRVs, so what you have for fire flow conditions today may not be there 10 years from now as we manage the pressure zones around the system. So that's why a lot of this, you know, these fire guys will call and say, what's the fire flow at this address? And may change over time.
It seems like from a liability perspective, the system designed to do what the system's designed to do. If it's 1-inch lines that the architect and the engineers could work around that versus providing the option that could lead to some issues down the road. Like if you have too many hookups that are 2-inch, that could lead to some...
Well, and what may happen is you'll see these fire guys tell them you need a 2-inch service. And we got a 1-inch from the court to the curb stop. It really doesn't help them.
Yeah.
You know, but they may talk them into that, thinking that, you know, they're going to give a little more fire, a little more water volume into the home, but that's really not the way the hydraulics work on that.
No. In reality, they should be installing cisterns or storage within the structure to accommodate for larger flows.
There is engineering ways around it. I think the starting point is, and maybe it would behoove the district to get clarification from the fire department on what their requirement is. They're the fire marshal. We don't require sprinklers. We have no authority to tell them whether they need them or not, or how they need to perform. The fire department does. And the one time that I did visit with the fire chief, he felt that the fire sprinklers were being over-designed, and maybe, I don't know if it was just overselling or what was the purpose, but we need to come to an agreement on what the district can provide, gallons per minute in that house, and stop, you know, being obsessed with line size, because they're looking at it bigger is better. Simple as that. Can't blame them. But for us, there are some real repercussions with a 2-inch line. The water hammer capability goes through the roof with a 2-inch line compared to a 1-inch line. There's a lot of, you know, infrastructure and maintenance issues that aren't being considered, obviously, by a sprinkler person. So, and this kind of came up quick, because this infatuation with 2-inch lines just kind of hit us all at once here. But I would prefer, you know, really from a, you know, forced a decision today that if it's got a 1-inch line, it stays a 1-inch line. If there's anything needs to be changed.
This isn't the vehicle for that. This is about rates. So if we remove this, there's nothing about doing this. And the change would be in our water use ordinance, where we would add a new section dealing with this fire issue, and we would amend that. And that's our policy for water connections in general. It's a much broader document than this. So this is just about rates.
Right.
So and you only need one reading of this, and there's a couple of discussion points on user fees, your monthly sewer and water. If our increases are over 5%, it requires a mail-out notice, public hearing, all the rigmarole you go through for a big rate increase. This is changing connection charges. So this language here about the 5%, I don't think it applies in this case. We've got Susan on the call, and I believe I mentioned that to her. Does this require a full-blown public hearing, because we're changing the connection fee side of this, and they're more than 5%, obviously. Susan, do you want to comment on that point? Maybe she's gone.
I'm not gone, but I do have a hearing that starts in about 20 minutes. So when we worked through this, we said it's rates that you have the 5% limit. And so in the analysis of looking at what this does, we reached the conclusion that it isn't subject to the 5% limitation.
Right.
So you say you might just leave it in there as is.
Yeah. And this was in, you'll recall, we were rate ordinances. We have been for years to help expedite the process of rate setting. We switched that to resolution format. So this is the second resolution in that regard. That language is in our first one as well. And I see no harm in leaving it in there. The other discussion point is the effective date, which is October 1, 2021, which is the beginning of our fourth quarter. So this resolution, if adopted with that date, would take effect October 1.
Ron, is there a reason why we can't make it effective as approval of this resolution?
I think you can make it effective at today's board meeting with that change.
Why wouldn't we want to do this? Because it's not a quarterly billing issue. It's just this would be the new rates.
And that would be fine. I just rounded it up to the quarterly start point, which is not too far off. But you could, I believe, make it effective with the approval September 21.
Well, I'd be in favor of making it effective immediately.
I agree.
Okay. So we've got that change on the table, and then deleting the water service line up charges.
And Ron, your plan is to deal with that at a later resolution?
It would be an amendment to our water use ordinance, which is a rather substantial ordinance document. We really haven't done anything in the way of amendments to that for quite a few years. It was originally adopted in 1999. There have been a few amendments to that. I think the last ones were four years ago, something like that. So, and we would put that propose amendments to that for a future meeting.
I think that'd be great. We could, it sounds like some of these issues are coming to a head now. And Jim, temporarily, can we just suspend all those 2-inch additions? And
I'm not sure.
I don't know how many you have on the table, right? Now.
3 or 4. I think we already approved at least 2 of them. So I think we have to push 3 to 1 we've already approved.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see that kind of away pretty quick, so maybe we can start working on that document for next
Spanish Peaks, interesting. I think all their services are 2-inch.
They are primarily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been doing
But their
that.
System is designed for that. The mains are 12-inch or 14 or something like that.
From what I understand, most of their mains are still 8-inch, so I don't know if they just have an extra capacity to accommodate for that. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
Well, part of the reason for that is their density per neighborhood is a lot less than where we're talking about. They're big, big lots, big house, you know, big houses spread apart.
Mm-hmm. And they've got a big booster station up by their water tank, so it's kind of artificially controlled with their boosters and what pressure they get. Spanish Peaks is running their own water system. We're not doing that.
Yep.
We've seen some problems with some of those services because laying 2-inch water lines is not that easy. Contractors will put couplers in there, and that's usually a bad idea. Always a bad idea.
Any further discussion or comments? I would entertain a motion.
To do what?
To have a district resolution 21-06 improving increases connection charges.
I'll move it.
Mike Wasinski just moved it, Tom.
Mike Wasinski, you moved it with effective date today?
Correct.
We have a second.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mike Wasinski and a second by Mike Dukanoy. I would take any public comment at this point in time. Hearing none, I'll call the question. Brian Wheeler, how do you vote?
Vote yes.
Vic Fast, how do you vote?
Yes.
Peter Manka, how do you vote?
I've been saying through this entire process, I just feel like this water investment charge is rather low when we look at how we compare to other water systems and we look at some of the challenges that we're going to be faced with in the near future in providing water supply. I feel like for right now it's fine, but I think we're going to be revisiting this pretty soon, and that charge is going to need to go up if we're going to be
be providing adequate water supply for the development we're looking at. So that's just my two cents, but I vote yes for this resolution.
Mike Lisinski?
Yes.
Mike Duquesne?
Yes.
Bill Shropshire?
Yes.
I vote yes. It passes unanimously.
Just one other comment on this before we leave it. Ryan Graff is still working on his full narrative report on his analysis. We should have that shortly. So there'll be a document that accompanies these recommendations for our file.
All right, we are on to old business capital improvement plan projects.
We removed that line C, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two changes will be made to the final print copy. Scott Bunker, are you still on? I know Scott's traveling today.
Yeah, I'm on. I'm walking, though. You and I talked yesterday, Ron, that it's all in the letter and there's nothing real exciting happening out there other than excavation for headworks and the fermenter, and we're just cruising along with them. Most of their submittals are in on earthwork and pipe, and all that stuff's been approved. So we're into the details and architectural stuff and things like that as far as submittals go.
Okay.
We've got that attractive new concrete plant.
Not an easy task. There is an updated schedule included in the board packet. I'll keep doing this each month. These things do change over time. We've been doing our bi-weekly construction meetings with the contractor and engineers, and those have been very smooth and helpful as we go through our work here. Scott, you had put together a proposal on, this would be task order number 9, which is really finishing something we started a couple years ago. We have GPS mapped in all our sewer manholes.
The curbside is going to be
water model with AE2 and mapping the manholes. The intent of that is to do a hydraulic model of the sewer collection system at some point. So this task order number 9 would be contract work to do the sewer model, and it would be also using the same platform that we use for the water model, I believe. Is that correct, Scott? Or Kelsey?
That's correct. They're both Innovize products. One's InfoWater and one's InfoSewer, but they're same software company.
Right, and the cost of this, $88,688. And I would like to push this ahead while Grant's still here, because he knows more about our sewer system than anybody.
How's it funded?
This would be, well, Terry, I don't know that we have anything in our budget. So this would
it's be not out in the budget.
Be out of our reserve.
Well, look, there are some amendments that'll be at the next board meeting. And I can put this in as an amendment to our budget for this year.
And the reason we brought it forward was just last month talking about succession planning and how eventually it would be nice to have facility plan updates for water and wastewater with this staff transition, and just catching that institutional knowledge these guys have.
So we could table this till the next meeting, Terry, or we feel good about approving it today and then doing your budget amendment?
Yeah, I'm fine with approving it today and in the budget and the board, if it's all right with the board. It's a formality. We can get these started because time is of the essence on some of these things.
And then there's a second proposal for water.
That one,
cover that.
Yeah, that's for what we call the Cascade Mountain Village improvements. It's kind of a potluck of six different pieces and parts of improvements that need to be done up there that you all have been chewing on for years. We put in for ARPA funding for that and scored pretty low because we don't have any documents or PER. And the need didn't score that well. We're going to take another run at that, depending on what ARPA decides to do with their second round. But Musket was like, hey, if we didn't score well because we didn't have any meat to the project, then let's at least get a 30, if not plans and specifications, since the work's got to be done regardless in the next few years. So we laid out the entire design and bidding there, but we're only suggesting that you scope for the 30 because there's some big items in there that we need to figure out if you're going to need, such as filtration of the sulfur particles that'll be formed with chlorination of H2S. We're not sure that's necessary. Woodard and Curran wasn't sure that was necessary. It's got to be worked out with DEQ, but if it is necessary, that's a different project. So we didn't want to open, you know, for a 60 and 90 and final, not knowing exactly what we're designing. And we bounced that back and forth with Jim a couple of times. So Jim, you want to comment? Kelsey's on the meeting too. She did the bulk of the work on this.
Well, no, we went through this kind of item by item and with priorities and stuff, and I would strongly encourage the district to move forward with this, especially with the opportunity available to us with the ARP money.
So this would be an additional $96,000 on the water capital budget, is that right?
If we go with the 30% start, kicking off point, which Scott outlined, and I agree that's a good place to start. We need to get closer to shovel ready to be more eligible for this money, basically, and this would be a step in that direction.
Does that get us all the way there?
No. This would be 30% design is what Scott's suggesting.
That's enough to get the in line.
That's kind of a question for Scott, but
well, Kelsey's on the meeting. Kelsey, I think I read an email from you where you were looking at some other grant opportunities through FEMA. You could comment.
That's correct. We're actually speaking with the Montana Hazard Mitigation Officer this afternoon about the eligibility of this project for some preliminary design and planning funding. So that's a little bit different than the FEMA funding, but I guess the Montana Hazard Mitigation Officer receives funding for projects, and the eligibility of this project are just that we're going to do backup generators and reduce the number of single points of failure within the system, and increase the resiliency and reliability of the system against any major catastrophic events like an earthquake or something like that. So that's kind of the angle that we're taking, and why the project is eligible for the hazard mitigation funding and potentially FEMA funding.
How much money are you potentially looking at?
It depends on how much the mitigation officer has. Montana only got $5.7 million for the FEMA funding. And so that's kind of under question because they require a pretty in-depth benefit and analysis, benefits and disadvantages analysis that our financial services consultant said costs around $30,000 just to do the analysis for the FEMA application. So I think the steps are to talk with the hazard mitigation officer first about any potential funding available for planning and preliminary design, and then regroup to discuss if FEMA funding is something we want to approach or not. And she might have some input on whether or not that's worth it for this project too. But the hazard mitigation funding for preliminary and planning, preliminary design, sorry, and planning is separate from the FEMA application. And I should have an idea of how much is available. I can update you later today on that.
Okay.
You should add too that exclusive of outside funding, a lot of this project reduces your energy use up there in the village and Cascade with inefficient arrangement of pressure zones, essentially.
What's this project all about, Jim?
Well, this is basically a CIP, capital improvement project, and we're just, my role in here was identifying the priorities that have been, we've talked about for years and got started on some. So the funding part of it, Scott and Kelsey are rounding that part up, but I can give you a copy of the priorities that went into this document. She actually summarized them very well within this document. If you get a chance, take a look at it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm actually scrolling through the scope on task order 10 here. There's quite a few pieces for that.
Does this include that, the new dedicated pipeline?
Yes, it does.
Pipeline to the tank?
Force main.
Yeah.
Right. The primary, the big overview in the Cascade system is just the efficiency and trying to deal with these super, super high pressures that we have by splitting the pressure zones, bringing on the supply that we're working on with the test wells we're doing, which we'll be pump testing one of them today. So it's all part of everything we've been moving forward on for years, putting it all together.
And the dedicated line would run through this open space up to the Cascade tank. Right now, we pump through PRVs all the way up to the tank. And then one of the recommendations from the water CIP work that Trek did for us a few years ago is to get the Cascade system on its own pressure zone. And there'd be a significant power savings by doing that. Because right now we pump all the way up to their tank, which is 5% of the demand on the system up there. All the demand's in the Mountain Core area. So if we could split those systems like it was originally set up, the Mountain Wells 1 through 4 going to the tank, which has been rehabbed, the 500K tank, right here, that's where your big savings comes from. And that's all part of this work that A2 would be putting in design.
What's a realistic timeline on something like this? 2 years?
I mean, it would be a several-year project, but it all depends on the aggressiveness that we attack it, you know, financially, and these are very doable projects, and they need to be done. And with this opportunity for funding that we have right now, I'm encouraging full speed ahead. It's good timing with the work we're doing right now with the exploration and new supply and everything else. It can all fall together very nicely.
Is this FEMA funding or ARPA funding?
We would be pursuing both, Steve.
Thank you.
Yeah, this sounds like, or reads like, the wish list of what we've been wanting to do for...
It is, and the supply is, the lack of supply on the Cascade side has been the issue, because the Cascade well situation turned out different than what we originally had thought. So we've been working towards that. And at the same time, once we get that supply, we can fix some real issues that have been, you know, challenging the water system for years. So it's, now is the time, that's for sure. Because, the sewer system has been the main focus, and the water has struggled along, but it's definitely going to need some attention.
Well, if you get to a 30% and you don't get funded, or you all end up with other priorities or whatever, at least you'll have that. When Kelsey did the ARPA funding, it's also now on your intended use plan for SRF money, so it's on the state's radar as well for future SRF underlying note.
Anything else? Well, thank you, Scott and Kelsey. I think we're moving on to ARPA funding update.
So just to clarify, we're not going to move forward these contracts at this meeting? Are these task orders not?
Were you looking for a vote on this, Ron?
These would be changes in the engineering contract. So if we're going to approve them, I think it would be appropriate to have a motion in the meeting to do that.
I'll make a motion to approve the funding for these projects as outlined.
Both of them, Peter, 9 and 10. Task orders 9 and 10.
We want to do 10 all the way through, just do the 30% initially until we get more information from Kelsey.
I believe we're looking at 30%, right?
Yeah, the 96 is 30%.
96 is
30%.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. Good clarification.
And Terry, can we use PIC money for the water portion, the 30%?
Yeah, we can pull that money out of the water PIC fund. But they'll both be on the budget amendments at the next meeting.
All right, we have a motion by Peter Malka. Do we have a second?
A second.
I believe that was Mike Wasinski seconding.
That's correct.
Any further discussion? Any public comment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously.
All right, thank you. Down to the Mountain Village well exploration. Mark Kinane is in Big Sky. Bridger Drilling got rigged up yesterday to do a pump test on well 7, which I put in
eight, actually.
Or it's eight. Mm-hmm. Which is shown here on my manager's report. Jim, do you want to add anything more to that? Or?
No, we'll know a lot more here at the end of the week. We will be testing well 8, we'll be monitoring well 7 and well 2, which is not in that picture Ron has up right now, but for connectivity, we're put in a. So what we're hoping for is well 8 showed potential up to 300 gallons a minute when we drilled it in July or August, and now we'll do the real test and see what how it holds up over duration time. And
it would be a 3-day pump test.
7 was already pump tested, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And that was less promising than we had hoped.
Well, it was a little better when we drilled it.
Kind of interesting how close this all is together, and
it's crazy.
Potentially how different they're responding.
It's complicated geology up there, that's for sure.
And then what's the status on 4 and 10?
Neither one of those showed much promise initially on the drilling. Well, 7 was over 100 gallons a minute, which, you know, we were hoping for more, but as time goes by, we're, you know, if we could get two wells, modest producing wells out of 7 and 8, that would be a win. And that's what we're hoping for right now, and we'll know more within a week or so.
Brian Wheeler, you don't have any activity in there right now, do you, that we need to be aware of?
Well, you do have Doppelmeyers in there with their staging areas on both of those. So we just got to make sure recording that area. I don't think it'll have an impact, but a lot of activity as far as traffic goes around both those areas.
Okay.
I put up some barriers with orange, just given the amount of trucks coming and going.
And we're aware, Brian, we talked to him yesterday, and what's going to happen this week shouldn't have any effect on their access in or out.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. In fact, after shutting down this week, it'll take some pressure off. Right now, the day lot is for parking, and so they can't stage in there. After this weekend, they'll be able to stage in the day lot, so it won't be quite so tight in there.
I see some discussion in the packet on well number 9. What's the status up there? We're still waiting for Phil to be moved.
Access hasn't been available yet. I don't know, schedule-wise, with the driller and with Mark, whether they'll be able to move in after this. Not. Our focus has been on pump testing 8. So.
Mm-hmm. Are we still shooting to get 9 done this
That's
season?
Right here, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that question. It's kind of a Mark Kinane thing because of the alterations we had. His original site was, of course, down in the green grass there, which is rising bull access. But when that proved undoable, they moved it up. And then Boyne has a lot of activity in that area. I haven't been up there recently to see if it still is. But it's a low.
It's way tamed down. Hey, Jim, that area is a lot less traffic right now than the area you're actually testing in. You're in the kind of center. We're over there. We've done the majority of our fill work. So might be something to think about as things focus on the village.
That's good news. And I'll take Mark up there this afternoon and get him a look at that.
All right, moving along, ARPA funding update.
Jim?
Yeah.
Jim and Ron, have we done any more work on setting up a testing for those wells down by Lone Moose?
That's on Mark's to-do list. I think he said at the end of the month, the 1st of October, he would have time to evaluate that data that was given to us.
Okay.
That's the flat iron test well.
Yeah. Right.
I think they're going ahead with some planning county commission meetings in October.
Hey, Jim, any other thought on the Elk Park Jeep trail that had that point?
I'm sorry, Brian, you went in and out there.
Park back in the woods. Okay. Any other thought, if you can hear me on this, on that Elk Park skiers left Jeep trail, you know, that area we talked about where there's some testing had been done in the past?
Yeah, I think you're referring to kind of the proximity of the Flatiron Wells.
Yeah, it's a little higher up.
Right, right. And I think that, if I'm understanding you correctly, that'll be taken a look by Mark when he evaluates their wells. If they do look promising, then the geology and the close proximity will certainly come up.
Okay.
Those wells really don't do much for us in the global perspective.
But. No, they're, and that's important to realize that the. Whether there is, even if there is water there, that's not really going to help our capital improvement plans on the mountain without a monumental high-pressure pump line going up, which is not going to be easy at all to even build or even to make it work over time. It's basically taking what we're doing at Cascade and the problems we're trying to fix and magnifying them by putting a bunch of high pressure in from very far below. So. But on the other hand, the Lone Moose system wells never produce what they originally thought. So water in that area isn't necessarily a bad thing, but we don't want to confuse it with solving problems on the mountain. So definitely worth looking into. And the whole Flatiron ask is a very complicated thing. And they're kind of referring them wells as a solution to our mountain problems, and it's probably not, but there obviously is some value there if the water is really there over a long term.
So it would be pretty directly associated to Flatiron, Lone Moose.
Lone Moose, possibly down below. Right now we're sitting good because the action we took years ago with you're sitting good in the meadow with the wells 4 and 5, but obviously at full build out, more water will be needed because if you remember, Hidden Village, Aspen Grove, and Lone Moose all came with wells, and we originally, thought they could supply themselves, and that hasn't been the case. So finding water there is a good thing. We have the pipeline there, but going the other direction up the mountain and the Cascade issue, it's not a likely solution.
You're not diverting water off the water main up to the Lone Moose tank, though. You are supplying that with their wells at this point.
We are, because of the extremely small demand. We've got the Lone Moose wells, which are only producing about 10 or 15% of what they were supposed to produce, still are enough to supply the few condos in Lone Moose. But of course, it's a small portion of the overall development there. We are supplying Aspen Grove right now with mountain water. So the mountain system is taking care of a lot of supply demands that it never really intended to, and that's why we're looking for more supply on the mountain.
How's that water quality of those Lone Moose wells?
It's not bad. It's not bad at all, the ones we have. Mm-hmm. We don't have the iron and magnesium, whatever that showed up in the, the test results from Flatiron. They do have iron and manganese issues, so they're, it appears there may be, even if the water supply is there, there may be treatment necessary, right, too. So
the Lone Moose well is pretty good. Mm-hmm. Quality, but just not very productive.
Supply isn't near what they had originally thought.
And we had Canaan look at those and pump test them quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. I can't remember that.
All right, moving on to ARPA funding.
Yes, I wrote a little bit about that in my report. Got a call from Anna Miller, DNRC, a couple weeks ago, letting us know that we'd be getting $2 million for the wastewater treatment plant project, and the Canyon was also awarded $2 million. So the legislature, at the end of the day, their recommendations, the way it went forward, and that was a $2 million cap right down the list of the ranked projects, starting number one. They got down to about 70 or 71 on their list. So if you were in for $1.5 million, you got $1.5 million. If you're in for $3 million, you got $2 million. So it wasn't a whole lot of science behind it, but that's the way they're doing it. And my comment there, the $2 million we could use for engineering, we could use it to reimburse ourselves for the pre-procurement package we bought for $1.3 million. We've got options in terms of what we put forward to collect that. We'll also talk to resort tax as we work through this. With the $2 million, that gets us potentially closer to our bid alternate to do the additional tankage, which I think we need to get there, and we still have reserve we could potentially put forward to that. And there's still county money sitting out there. Gallatin County's got $22 million that they're working on hiring a grants person to figure out a procedure to do their allocations, which I don't think they've got that in place yet. So that's still out there, and that may be a funding source for part of this. And so RSCI had told us, I don't know if it was in writing or verbally, that they would hold their price on that until July next summer. Scott, if you're still on the meeting, can you confirm that?
Yeah, I asked them about it last week at the meeting, and they are going to want a chance to update that price, but they can still get it done up until, you know, we don't have to let them know till next summer. But with the changes in steel, you know, the concrete should be less than if they were getting it from Kenyon Noble with their own batch plant. So we just need to talk to them and renegotiate that price.
Okay. Well, I think it's still worth pursuing.
I think it's definitely worth talking to them and seeing what that price is. I got the impression it wasn't going to change wildly, but until we see it, we don't know.
That 4.7 I put in there was from my recollection. Is that the right number from our bid?
I don't have it in front of me either, but that's in the right ballpark.
Yeah. So there'll be more to come on that. We don't need to make any decisions today on it, but I'm not sure what. Have you talked to Anna Miller at all, Terry, on these awards? And there's a round two that will happen. They awarded $125 million. They're supposed to be getting at least double that. We're not sure what that means for the projects that have already been awarded. They may keep going down the list. We just don't know. You haven't heard anything different on that, have you, Scott or Kelsey?
I have not. They have a webinar, I believe Thursday, that I put the info in my letter if anybody wants to attend. It might even be tomorrow. And if you do want to attend, you have to pre-register for the Zoom. You can go up there and attend in person without any check-in. But if you want to attend remotely, you got to check in.
Okay.
And I think the county did open applications for minimum allocation funding.
I'll talk to you after the meeting. I haven't seen that yet.
just curious, we had some requests that were not really close to that 70, top 70 number. We have some in the hundreds.
Yeah, our water project ranked 115. Mm-hmm. There are 243 total applications. And as you go through that whole list, it's kind of interesting. Billings was in for 8 projects totaling $50 million. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many of their projects got funded, but there were some things that didn't make a lot of sense at the end of the day, in my opinion. How they did it, but they did.
Mm-hmm. So water project was the only thing. Was
water a project was the only thing that didn't get funded that we put forward, partly because we didn't have a PER, we didn't have the documents to support
right.
a higher rank. So some of the stuff we just talked through, if we
right. had that. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Moving in the right direction.
Okay. We have not had another housing committee meeting since our last meeting. Brian and Tom, if we put something together for later this week, does that work for you guys?
I'm around.
Same here.
Okay, we'll get something pulled together this week to reconvene that committee. Peter, you're on there too. Yep.
So. I feel like we're fairly close.
I agree. I think we need one more meeting to get it wrapped up.
Sure enough.
Yeah. Okay. Legal's been, we've had a very busy last couple of weeks. Both Mark Kinney and Scott Buecher put together rebuttal reports. I will forward those to you after the meeting if you want to read through them. Both Mark and Scott are being deposed. Scott, was it this week or next week?
Thursday. Mark's Thursday morning. I'm Thursday afternoon.
Of this week?
Yep. And the discovery closes on Friday this week.
Okay. That's okay.
I assume everybody saw that the firm is suing YC.
DEQ.
Correct.
Well, they sued DEQ.
DEQ, I believe.
They're suing DEQ.
And now it's
no making permit. There's a new effort being put forward to sue YC, although I don't think it suits them. File.
Intent to sue, I think.
Intent. Yeah.
On the same snowmaking grounds? Or?
No.
No nutrient stuff.
Which is similar to our.
So geez, I think it would be similar, but hard to know at this point what they're claiming. Cottonwood again?
Yeah.
Yep. Employee succession planning. We did interviews yesterday of 3 candidates for the wastewater operator / superintendent positions. 2 of the candidates were real strong, one from Kent, Washington, the other one from Pennsylvania. First guy we interviewed, you wouldn't bring him in, but the other 2 guys were good interviews, I thought. So the other thing, my position is being advertised out there on AWWA and the Public Works Director Association websites. I know you had a committee meeting for my replacement. I don't know if we've got any applications come in yet for mine. As we get those, we'll forward it to the committee. And then I think you all talked about maybe using a, or looking into a, I'll use headhunter for lack of a better term, or some sort of agency to help with this effort. And I don't know if you've identified someone for that yet. But,
I think it's Bill and
hey, Ron. You want me to give a summary just from the meeting that Mike Wilsinski and Bill Shropshire and I had, just real quick?
Yeah.
Yeah, we met after that, our last special meeting that we had, and just a few things that we're exploring and want to update the board with. You know, the idea, just bullet points from the meeting or the summary. Bill, I shot to you as well. If you have anything, or Mike, to add, go right ahead. But, you know, the points that we had as a subcommittee were to, you know, meet with Ron and initiate a broad open discussion to identify expectations and a timeline for this position. Explore a restructuring to groom it a replacement. You may restructure in a way that would have a more, a little different job responsibilities, COO versus an executive director or a managing director, just to segregate the responsibilities, the operational side versus the legal, which has become a full-time job with overtime for Ron, obviously. Capital improvement side, district expansion, and prioritize time for team leadership. Ron's for all employees, looking at the board's role, avoid disruption with clear communication, and research avenues for qualified candidates, current subcontractors, guys like Scott and Mark and Mace, look into an HR consulting firm, and as Ron outlined, managers report the AWA and PWDA identified. SWOT exercise is interesting to look at it for the process of succession planning. Of course, the strength is to work in America, you know, Montana/Bozeman/Big Sky. The weakness, of course, the living in the best place to work in America. Threats are labor. It's brutal out there to get qualified candidates with the difficulty in housing and so on. But there's a tremendous opportunity given the time we have right now, the strong team, and the restructuring to reflect future demands and the monumental growth that we have seen in the past decade and we're dealing with now. So the idea would be to schedule another subcommittee meeting and hit these bullet points with the board and look for either thoughts or direction or other things that we should be covering as a subcommittee. But I think the best part of it is everyone's working now kind of on a parallel path to have a strong succession plan moving forward. That was it. That was one committee meeting.
Thanks, Brian. We are going to
Brian.
Wastewater candidates to this week.
New applicants for your job, where are those funneled to? Those go to Scott?
They go to Jen Simmons with AE2. She's helping us get these things advertised, and they come into a Gmail account we set up for this job hiring effort. So it kind of exists in its own email platform. So we log into that, see what's come in. Jen sees it as well, and then she's been helping us by putting a spreadsheet together as applicants come in for helping us rank them and things, so, which has been good from my standpoint to have that kind of assistance.
We also put both those positions on our website as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we ask the candidates where they see it, it's different with everyone. One guy saw it on our website, one saw it in Indeed. You know, so we've got him in various places, so it's getting around. The one thing that has surprised, I think, all of us is we haven't been run over by hundreds of applications. So it's, and I think people are looking at housing costs here, too, and I may scare some of them away before they even try.
Yeah. Have we considered getting some that workforce housing, or?
Well, I have kicked that around a little bit in some discussions I've had with various board members. 10 years ago, I would have never thought we needed something like that. It changed my opinion. The district to have something in Big Sky with all this workforce housing we're going to see constructed over the next 10 years doesn't make sense to me.
Right. To have somebody up here, boots on the ground, something happens.
Yeah,
it could be a huge advantage.
Tom, I think you were going to say something there.
No, I didn't have anything, but thanks for that great update. And sounds like we're moving ahead on a plan.
We are. I think we're down to new developments. This one came in last year as one version, and it's been sold and is now a different plan. So in the board packet, I put a copy of the email documents I got from Reagan Frew from the Gallup County Planning Office asking us to review this. The developer has reached out to us as well. They'd like to come in and do a meeting. He called me the other day. I need to get back to him to schedule something. But that's 32 condo units total. So I think these big buildings are fourplexes. So there's 8 units there, 7 duplexes. That track 4 has been on our tables for SFE allocations for years, and it's 64.1 SFEs, and it's the last big vacant tract left in the Meadow Village subdivision. So we'll be looking at that. It'll require some sewer and water main extensions. It'll require a capacity letter, because it's going to condos, which will be a subdivision exercise. I don't know what their timelines are for construction yet.
Just FYI, Bucher signed out, so he's off the meeting.
Okay. Any questions about that?
Kind of side note, but read an article recently about that development in West Fork, and the use of the fill material to infill a wetland.
Well, the wetland, yeah, there was a flurry of emails and stories on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't heard any more.
Yeah, I just kind of was.
Peter's bringing up the wetland in the meadow. Up in the Blue Grouse subdivision. This wetland right here. And I don't know what's going on with that.
Yeah. That's coming from that corner lot on Spruce Cove and Big Pine.
You know, Dick Fast, I think you were tracking that story a little bit. Have you heard anything more on that?
No, I'm just curious what it was. I haven't looked at it anymore.
Yeah.
It looks kind of wet.
Yeah, it does.
Now it's filled with dirt.
Down to sewer and water permits. Tom, I updated the permits file, so some of those things you just pointed out the last meeting are in there. The 111 Scott Bierger was referring to is from this. And then our list of projects, permit activity. Didn't have anything to add under general correspondence. Our next meeting date is proposed as October 19th. Is that a good date for everybody?
That's fine for me. Ron, would you include in the packet the letter that was sent to me yesterday?
I can.
Next board meeting, I think it should be in the record.
Sure, we'll do that.
We'll be out of town Tuesday.
Out of town but can attend, or out of town?
We'll be able to attend.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what it takes.
Tuesday the 19th.
We took care of some big business today, so I don't know that that would be that critical.
Yep.
So that was Mike Wilsinski talking off this side here. He's going to be out.
Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Peter Manka, the second, I'm not sure.
Mike
Wilsinski.
Mike Wilsinski, all those in favor say aye.
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 I'm good.
Thank you.